Welcome back to From the Inside Out. It's good to be back.
We wanted to thank our listeners for all the support and the feedback. It really helps us continue to do this work. Keep them coming and subscribe if you haven't yet. We have some exciting interviews coming up in the future and conversations.
Yes, and subscribe and write a review because we love reviews and we love feedback. So we're actually going to read a review. This review is from, it's titled Fabulous. It's on the top, it says, incredible show. Ida and Rivka have a special way of asking questions and inviting their guests into great conversations. Thank you for an important show. Thank you so much, Fabulous.
A few months ago, I watched a documentary called The Social Dilemma. And it really struck a chord because you have creators of social media platforms telling us that they had to create these algorithms to help them stay off social media. A few people had had contacted you, Rivka, and me as well, and asked if we can cover social media, if we could talk a little bit more about it.
Yeah.
So that, I think, began the journey for us in bringing you this episode, which took a little longer than usual.
Yeah. One of the reasons being that my daughter got engaged.
That's right.
Which is very,
very
exciting.
Very exciting.
Thank you. Cannot believe I'm actually saying that. As well as things being busy for you, Ida, as well, because your
my nephew is
getting married and you have all your family with you. So watching The Social Dilemma, it bothered me because I'm also on social media and I wanted to look into how we can make a difference and bring light to the table, to social media.
It's not going anywhere. Social media is
not going anywhere. And we use it for our businesses. We want to interact with our friends that live far away, far and near. There are many angles we could have taken with this, but we just took the angle of looking at the pros and cons of social media and how we can use it in the best way possible.
And with the goal of becoming better informed and to bring you all the information we can so that you can make an informed decision for yourself about the role that social media plays in your life. And I think especially now, being that teenagers today are the first generation to have been born into the social media age. So if you have a teenager, chances are they have exposure, a lot more exposure than you have as a parent to social media, to technology. And let's talk about the pros and cons and what we learned from our research and from talking to some of the experts. It's been a lifeline right now, especially during COVID, for many people who are home during the pandemic, and it's helped families stay in touch, and it really puts the world at our fingertips. But it's also regarded as one of the key factors involved in the mental health crisis that we're experiencing today.
Right. This is not an easy topic to discuss without entering the controversial territory, but we both believe that awareness is key in solving the problems we face, along with some tips that we feel are going to, that we are working on and that helped us and that we are going to continue to work on and incorporate the usage of social media.
Right. And I want to encourage you to listen with an open mind. And I saw this great word that applies very well here. It's called bracketing. And what bracketing means is you have in mind what you believe already is about whatever it is, whether it's social media or something else. But at the same time, you're willing to put that in brackets for a little bit and listen to what people who might have an opposing view have to say. And based on the information that you got, make the decision that's right for you. And I think it's, you know, sometimes when we open ourselves up to what other people have to say or how other people think, it allows us to communicate better.
Yeah, I like that word.
Yeah. It's just about being open to interpretation and hearing what others might have to say.
Bracketing can also be used with when we're scrolling and looking at what other people are posting. We can use this concept of bracketing, being open-minded too, even if we disagree or we're bothered or triggered by what they're posting.
Yeah, it's essentially about suspending judgment.
Right.
You know? Okay, so here's how we're doing it. And we kind of got this idea from the Wall Street Journal, actually. I think every week they have this, but they ask a question and bring in two opposing viewpoints to answer the question. So for example, they would ask, should you buy a house? And you'll have why you should buy a house, why you shouldn't buy a house. They show you both sides and you decide for yourself what you think makes sense for you. I love that approach because it really shows that they're trying to see two sides of the issue, which I think in general, the media has a hard time doing. It's usually very biased one side or the other. So I think it's a good—
Especially today.
Yes. And I think it's a smart approach.
I really like this approach because the reason I was hesitant about taking on this subject is because I myself, until we put this together, I was trying to find a way to use social media in the best way possible. And I found myself wondering, how often should I be posting? And oftentimes I spent more time than I would have liked to on social media. So I wasn't prepared to discuss it openly until I had a clearer understanding of the way it impacts me.
I think you're right. And I think that is precisely why this conversation is important, because we're not acting as experts. And we are also genuinely curious about, you know, how to find the things that we need to know so that we can make the right decisions.
Before we jump in, let's start by broadly defining what social media is in its literal definition from the dictionary. Websites and applications that enable users to create and share content or to participate in social networking. And some of the most popular social media websites include Facebook, TikTok, WeChat, Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr, LinkedIn, YouTube, WhatsApp, Snapchat, Pinterest, Reddit, and there's actually more right. that I'm not even aware of.
Yeah, I feel like when we think about social media, we think like Instagram and Facebook, but it's so much more than that.
Okay.
So, okay, it's estimated that in 2020, there were around 3.6 billion people using social media around the world. And that was up from 3.4 billion in 2019. But the number is expected to increase to 4.41 billion people in 2025. And that means that more than half of the planet is on social media.
Okay, so it's going to be good to talk about some of the pros then. One of the biggest pros of social media is that it nurtures and expands relationships. Improving communication and strengthening human connection is the reason social media emerged.
And also it's exponentially increased the resources for mental health information and support. And research shows that people who get support from their peers who are struggling with similar problems actually have better health outcomes. And, you know, whether it's a physical condition like, you know, diabetes or a psychological one like depression, online support has been a tool that's been used and very helpful. There's still a stigma around seeing a therapist. I mean, there are many reasons why someone might not go see someone if they need help. It could be financial constraints. It could be because they're maybe worried about reaching out and asking and putting themselves out there too much.
Yeah, there's 24/7 availability, even though that can be a con too. But the pro of that is that the internet never sleeps and you don't even need to be home at your computer to access the resources you need. This can truly be life-saving.
It's because there's no geographic limitations, because location is also an obstacle, you know, for people to participate in support groups where you have to physically attend. So, you know, online groups pull members from all over the world and can host so many people. And that really adds to our pool of knowledge and experience. Like Zoom, for example, people have been able to gain access to webinars. I could speak from personal experience and that I was able to give workshops to people around the world. I would have never had that opportunity. And it's also nice to be able to keep up with family and friends.
I really, my childhood friends all the way in Australia, the other end of the world, I so value social media for that and being able to connect with them and keep up our relationship.
You know, that's on a personal level. And then from a career perspective, there are so many tools right now that make it easier to use social media for networking, for finding, you know, like-minded people who you want to work with, that you want to collaborate with. You know, Rivka, you and I, we collaborated on social media.
Yes. I think even as far as my business goes and being a health coach, I would say a lot of it is word of mouth and, you know, one person's success leads to the next person coming to join the program. But I would also say a lot of it is social media and sharing people's successes and sharing inspiration has definitely helped me grow my business as well. Well, it does give small business owners the power to be more competitive with larger companies, but they can reach a wider audience, perform better customer service, share press releases and other company news. And yeah, I think even charity campaigns are an amazing thing that came out of social media.
They raised so much money to help people.
When we asked Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks of blessed memory, if you haven't listened to it yet, we interviewed him. We had the honor and the gift to have been able to have that opportunity. And when we asked him about social media, he strongly believed that it should not replace face-to-face human interaction. But at the same time, he had the capacity to make a positive difference in the world. And he had mentioned WhatsApp. That was his way, where he felt he had a great impact.
I loved what he said about social media. You know, essentially what he was saying is that the very same attributes that make social media a positive force in our lives make it potentially dangerous as well. So teens and young adults are really, they're particularly at risk for the negative effects of social media, partly because they're a generation raised on the internet. They're raised on social media and digital technology. So these things are such integral and indispensable parts of their lives. And they're impressionable and eager for acceptance at that stage of life, you know, especially between the ages of 14 and 18. And they're also relatively inexperienced and in life, and that can really cloud their judgment and cause all kinds of issues.
Right, because most adults today remember what life was like before the internet and social media.
I think we take for granted that we didn't grow up with social media, and we don't realize the world that our kids are growing up in. It's very different from the world we grew up in. We can detach from social media.
It's hard.
And it's hard. Yes, I think if it's hard for us, could you imagine how hard it is for kids with these companies spending billions of dollars trying to get us to spend more time on social media, to spend more time on these technology devices? Internet addiction is not officially listed in the DSM, which is the manual that mental health professionals use to diagnose mental health issues. But several recent studies, including brain imaging studies of compulsive internet users, show structural and functional brain abnormalities that are similar to those found in people who have substance abuse problems. So the characteristics of pathological internet use are actually similar to the ones that are listed for substance-related and addictive disorders. And I have a feeling that there will be internet addiction, technology addiction in the next DSM, because they come out with an updated version every few years. I'm just going to share some of the characteristics of addiction, of substance-related addiction, of addictive disorder, so that you can see how similar they can be to internet use. Generally, they are very preoccupied with it. They use it to improve their mood. There's an increase in tolerance, which means that over time, you need more and more of, you know, in quantity to achieve the same high. They lose interest in other things. They continue its use despite the awareness of the harm it's causing. They experience withdrawal symptoms when it's out of their reach and or no longer available. And they have unsuccessful attempts to quit. These are all things that are listed in the DSM about substance-related and addictive disorders. Think about how this totally relates to people who have excessive use of social media. So it's something to be mindful of. Billions of dollars are spent using Vegas casino tactics to attract users to the platform, that their business. So they're driven by quarterly profits and Wall Street's insatiable desire for greater sales and profits. And usually it's at the expense of the people. Unfortunately, many teens as well. And then you have targeted advertising, where usually people use social media. A lot of people use social media as a news source, right? So what happens is they click on an article that catches their eye. And since the news disproportionately reports on negative things compared to positive ones, usually we're clicking on the negative ones. This has been around for ages, not just with social media. Even when we were watching the 6 o'clock news, it was always more bad than good.
Because that's what we're attracted to.
Unfortunately, right. So, and what happens is when they click on that, there are these algorithms. And so they continue to bring you more of what you already clicked on, and it distorts our perception of the world, because they're bringing you more. It's called like targeted advertising. They bring you more of what you're looking at. So it's literally curating information for you because it's interesting to you. And if you're prone to looking at this kind of content that doesn't serve you, there's actually a term for it. It's called doom scrolling, where people spend hours mindlessly scrolling social media because it's giving them what they want. And then afterward, they feel really bad about it. Like they wasted time.
Right. Because where focus goes, energy grows. So we continue in that cycle of seeing more of what we already looked at, and then we can get lost in it.
Exactly. And something called Facebook depression, which is a type of depression that affects teenagers who spend too much time engaging on social media sites, which can lead to reclusiveness and negatively damage their health by creating feelings of loneliness. And that can lead to, you know, low self-esteem. And there was a study a couple of years ago in almost 6,000 teenagers, students, who showed that those who self-reported addiction-like symptoms of social media use were more likely to report low self-esteem and high levels of depressive symptoms. And in a more recent study, people who used multiple social media platforms had more than three times the risk of depression and anxiety than people who used the fewest. These are scary numbers, but I think that it's important to remember that this does not necessarily mean that social media is all bad.
Yeah, so what is at the root? Social media might be the problem, but it also might not be the problem. And for some people, excessive use serves to numb. People can do the same thing with other things like emotional eating. People will turn to food instead of the actual problem.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that what Rabbi Sacks had said is very true and can address this too, is not to forget about human interaction. You're not really having human interaction when you're sharing or scrolling on social media, and that can be one of the underlying issues. You really need that human interaction.
When you view the problem, you have to view it through the eyes of the person who's coming in with the problem. It's really important. There's this quote, "We know the world through our relationship to it." So we have to understand the problem through the eyes of the examiner. So who is this person? What is their relationship with social media? Like, what are the questions that we need to ask ourselves to get a better idea of the world?
Yeah. Yes. We started asking ourselves the following questions. We called it mindful media. Well, being aware of the effects of social media and asking questions like, does this feel good? Is this helpful? Is this a good use of my time? Does it deplete me or energize me? Do I turn to it only when I'm feeling down? Do I turn to it for inspiration and growth? And what role does it play in my life?
Right.
Also, what issues do I struggle with? Is it fear or rejection, needing validation from others, low self-esteem, lack of connection? And also, what is my purpose? What is my goal? Is it driven by values? Very important.
Right. There's this great website that I want to recommend to you where you can actually fill out a questionnaire. It's free. Based on the questionnaire, it will tell you what are your top values. When you know what your values are.
Did you do this questionnaire?
I did.
I know you've told me this before, but I think it would be nice if you would you share what you discovered your values are?
Yeah, sure. Okay. So it's viacharacter.org, and you'll see that you can take the free survey. My values are kindness, empathy, and love of learning. Those are the top three based on the questions that I answered.
So that's something to think about, like when you're posting, when you're scrolling.
It could be eye-opening when you do that, because it helps give you direction.
Yes. And I think your value of empathy and kindness is a very important element to incorporate into social media when you're sharing. Well, we'll talk about that more in our tips, but I think that's a very important element to incorporate when you're sharing, to take the community who are following you into account.
Yeah.
And have that feeling of empathy and kindness as to what they value and what they would want to receive.
Right, exactly.
So after asking these questions, Ida and I have started giving ourselves the following guidelines. And it's things that we are incorporating, that we do practice, and some that we're working on, you know? So first of all, you know, you get to choose who you follow. So follow what helps you, not what hurts you. You set positive people you scroll. Instead of doom scrolling, which we mentioned, we're doing mindful scrolling. Instead of mindless scrolling, try mindfully engaging with content, substance, and inspiration for your own self-growth. And instead of following toxic influences, try following individuals who spread positivity and set up blocks and filters if some sites are triggering. So if you find yourself being hurt or being triggered by certain people that you follow, unfollow them. Because really, following who you appreciate, you'll end up feeling appreciative. And following things that are fearful, you'll end up feeling fearful. So add inspiring and positive accounts and good news daily to scrolling.
Yeah, you can choose who you follow. Remember that. It's so important.
This is really about being aware of how it's impacting our lives and recognizing that we actually have a choice. And we can unfollow someone who is not inspiring us. I just know that's not always easy, because sometimes it's a friend, but there are ways to block them coming into your feed. I've never actually done that either, but I know that there are ways, I've been told.
Right. I think the point is for social media to be a positive outlet and not a negative one.
I know that we are not getting off social media completely, and probably many, if you're listening to this, you're somebody that is on social media and would appreciate this conversation. There are times, perhaps, like towards the Simcha in my life that was happening, I needed to go off social media so that I could focus on my daughter, etc. And there have been times in your life where you feel like it's not a time to be on social media, but generally it is a part of our lives. And so we have to find a way for it to help us thrive. through this first tip, we get to choose who we follow, follow what helps us, not what hurts us. We are becoming more conscious followers, more conscious scrollers instead of doom scrollers.
I think it's really important, especially for parents, to know this, that time limits are so important. And iPhones have a function where you could set a time limit on every single app on your phone, including social media. You can set your timer, and after that time is up, it will turn off. You've got to preemptively set yourself up for success. You cannot expect that when you're mid-scrolling, that you're going to be necessarily be able to step out of it. Be proactive and preemptively solve the problems that are getting in the way. You can be very accountable. Nowadays, with these phones that we have, it's so easy to see what your social media use looks like, and you'll know if it's excessive or not. You'll know if it's getting in the way of doing the things that you need to do. And if you know that, then hopefully you can get into a problem-solving mindset and change it.
I do want to set myself time limits. And that actually leads me, I have started to do that in a way, and that leads me to my tip, which is find a way to start your day with what's right rather than what's wrong. And the first thing I would do usually when I would wake up in the morning is check out what's going on Instagram, what's going on Facebook, what's going on in the world. But since I became part of the 5 a.m. club, I start the day not with social media, but with a coffee. And actually, the first thing I do is thank Hashem. Like I say, brachot. And I try to take the first hour in that morning not to look at emails and Instagram, but to do journaling, listening to a podcast. You'll either learn something new or work on a project like our podcast episodes or a health project. But before that, prayer is the first thing in the morning, the brachot. And that is very empowering. Thanking Hashem in the morning starts the day with what's right. And there are prayers in which we ask for things, but then there are prayers that asks for nothing. It's just giving thanks. It gives thanks for what we are and where we are right now. And it teaches us to see what exists within us and the good surrounding us, not merely what catches our attention, like chaos and comparison and diversity, which can happen when we're on social media. And it sets our intentions for when we scroll or post on social media. I read this in a little gorgeous book that actually Ida gave me by Rabbi Sacks that is a limited edition. He wrote this after his father passed away, and there's a little section on prayer. The book is called Celebrating Life. And in this chapter on prayer, Rabbi Sacks says, prayer, not the press, is what makes the good news news. He also says prayers of thanks brings to the foreground what is usually in the background. So, you know, when we're on social media, we're, you know, the good stuff is often in the background. And so when we pray and we're even just saying Mode Ani, we're giving thanks and we're bringing to the foreground what is usually in the background.
I love that.
So that's something that has actually done a lot for me. And then I'll get to my posts or social media or whatever. There are some days where that doesn't happen. And I try and I see that my day is not really the same. And so, you know, I work at continuing on that path.
Yeah. What stuck with me is really setting an intention in the beginning of your day. I think the first hour of the day is so important. And actually, as a matter of fact, I would even say the night before, start setting the tone for the day after. So, and that really leads me to the next tip, which is I make my bedroom technology free. I think it's important. Not everybody agrees with me. Some people, you know, like to have their phone handy in case they need it. And obviously if someone is a doctor or someone who needs to be on call, it's a different story. But I charge my phone where I cannot see it or access it. And that really sets the tone because I fall asleep a lot sooner. I don't know, screen time keeps you up longer. And we know the same thing is true for kids. So I keep my room technology free. I feel like it makes a big difference. It sets the tone for the next morning when I wake up and I don't look at my phone right away. And I set my alarm so that I have to wake up and get out of bed to get my phone, which is great. It helps me get out of bed. Also, I mean, ideally, I would love to be able to not have to set an alarm so that I just read this article about the importance of getting good sleep. Your body should know when it had adequate sleep. So you should be able to not set an alarm and wake up at a decent hour without an alarm. So right now I can't trust that that's going to happen. I have to wake up for my kids, you know, to get them to school. But it's interesting. It speaks to the importance of getting a good night's sleep. And part of that is keeping your room technology free, not being on social media, not doom scrolling, not scrolling at all before you go to bed, because that might keep you up longer. And therefore,
yeah, good for you.
Yeah.
Okay. That's something I've got to work on. And thanks for that tip. I actually want to add something to that tip because you're really talking about having rest periods and rest sets priorities and perspective. And when social media becomes uninterrupted, we lose that natural rhythm of work and rest. And sometimes we can travel so fast, we completely miss the view. So that's what social media can do. But when we have a rhythm and a balance of work and play and rest and have regular intervals where we do stop, we can use it in a positive way. We are actually lucky to have Shabbat, where we are able to have the rest time from social media. Like, we just do it. And so that's just something I wanted to share. Well, you know, we're talking about taking that hour in the morning to have a break or at night. We actually have a weekend where we do that and we value it.
And it's interesting because we really, like, for us, Shabbos is non-negotiable. So we are not going to do those things on Shabbos, but it would be a lot harder if we had to intentionally set time away. It's much harder that way. So we're lucky in that we have that. It's like a preset.
Yeah. Because we know it's not easy doing it in the morning and in the evening. And it really takes a lot of work, conscious work on our part to do that.
Right.
But we have Shabbat where it just, we do it. And we thank Hashem for that.
Yeah. So this next tip really applies to parents, I think, more so than anyone. And I'm not speaking as a parenting expert because I'm not a parenting expert. And I am just sharing what I heard from some of the people that I respect, admire, people who are experts in the field. One of whom is Dr. Edith Eger, who's a psychologist. She wrote the book called The Choice. So I'll never forget how in an interview with her, she said, "Kids don't do what we say, they do what we do." And parents' frequency of electronics use can set the tone for what is permissible to their children, even without them knowing it. If you want your children to put their phones down, whether it's at dinner or, you know, in the evening, whenever, it will be more likely to happen if you take on that same approach. And again, I'm not speaking as an expert because I think that in some ways I struggle in this area. So I just want to be very clear that this is something that I know is very helpful to do, but it's not easy. So many parents will give their kids rules for social media. And absolutely, I think it's important to have guidelines in place, to have rules, restrictions, and all of that. At the same time, our best bet at having our kids engage in social media in a healthy way is for us to do the same thing. A parent came to me and said her daughter feels very left out. She has, because she's not allowed to have social media and all her friends are on it. It's really a tough situation for a parent who wants her child to be able to have social media, but is nervous about what might happen when she gets it. And so to that parent, I would say, you know, first of all, monitor your social media use, right? Set an example and set restrictions for your child. Speak to your child about why it's important to him or her that they have social media and explore that together and see what makes sense.
It's kind of really, like a personal thing. Allowing my kids to have Nush, even though I don't want them to have Nush. It's like the rest, all the kids in school are taking those kind of snacks. And so I got to adapt to the situation, allow them to have it sometimes too, so that they feel like they're doing what all other kids are doing.
Exactly.
But to each family their own. And I totally hear the dilemma.
Right.
But I actually want to add something from a different perspective. I read in this book, it's called The New Childhood, Raising Kids to Thrive in a Connected World by Jordan Shapiro. And it says that if your children are on social media, to actually join them and ask our kids about the games they play, or what they're doing on there, and try to play along with them. And this demonstrates that we take their ritual seriously, and it tells them that we value what they're experiencing. So it's kind of a nice thought to tap into and encourages them to feel positive about their emerging sense of self.
Yeah. And it nurtures connection, which is so important.
So I think that's a nice thing to keep in mind. Like, I know we do this sometimes if we're working on something together on social media and we got our kids to do little filters and send little videos to each other of our kids being dressed up on, what was it, TikTok or something like that. So kind of gets us a little bit involved with them, and we're all better prepared for living together, making sense of a connected world.
Better together. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So it's just something to keep in mind. Sometimes, so instead of being distant from it and just giving them their time limits, to kind of make it fun and interact with them and see what's up.
Right. Love
something
that.
I'm going to think about.
Yeah.
Try and do a bit more. So we've given you some tips for doom scrolling, which we have now changed to conscious scrolling or mindful scrolling. And we can easily apply this and ask those same questions that we asked ourselves about doom scrolling for posting. It's important to be mindful of what we're doing and why, you know, because we receive when we're scrolling and we're giving when we post. So I was listening to a Tim Ferriss podcast when I was researching social media, and he shared this line, make yourself better or make yourself feel better. To make yourself feel better, you can tear other people down. And in the long term, you'll probably lose self-respect and lose in competition. So, but if we focus on making ourselves better by posting positive content, not making other people feel worse and ourselves feel better, we'll be better off and we'll be sharing something inspirational. The difference between like having conviction and sharing what we believe and tearing someone down. And that kind of brings the ego into the picture. Let's touch on the ego for a minute.
Ego.
Because the ego has a lot to do with social media.
Oh my gosh, the ego. Brené Brown, she calls the ego the hustler, right? The ego that says, you know, you have no inherent worth. You got to hustle for it. She says, like, how fast are you going to run? How high are you going to jump? How many likes are you going to get on Facebook? How many comments are you going to have on that post? You know, that's the hustle of the ego, trying to get you to be in a scarcity mindset and measure your worth based on external things, like how many likes you get.
Brené calls it a scarcity mindset.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that word, the scarcity mindset. And I think we all know if we're in a scarcity mindset or what the opposite is a mindset of abundance.
I love this next tip, and I'm calling it managing compassionately. I heard another interview with Oprah where she interviewed Jeff Weiner. He's the executive chairman of LinkedIn. That's actually one of the social media platforms that I should probably get into a little bit more, but it's hard to be everywhere because it's meant to be a good business platform. Anyway, he spoke about managing compassionately, that this is ultimately the best way to manage a company. And as we all know, LinkedIn is a huge successful company. And he says you need to get out of your own head and remember that not everyone has the same strengths, and to tap into what their strengths are. And once you understand what motivates people and what they're good at and what inspires them, then you can get the most out of that person. And when I heard this, I thought of social media and how we can tap into what would inspire our followers, what would hurt them or make them feel more distant, what would make them feel more connected. And another interesting point that he brought up that I thought related to Instagram and Facebook was when he said that someone else wasn't managing things well in his company, he realized that sometimes he was doing the exact same thing. So when we're judging others, we can judge ourselves as well. And we can ask ourselves, do I do that too? And if we don't, we can ask ourselves, how can I be a better example and learn from that blogger or influencer? I heard Rabbi Taub say, and I really like this, he said, some people teach us what to do and some people teach us what not to do. Hang around the people that teach us what to do. And also that we're not going to fix the problem, but we will thrive in spite of the problem. So when we get hurt or the places where we are triggered, it's education for us. It's educational for us to hear this. Whenever we're triggered by social media, this is where we get to examine if I can use the situation as my laboratory for growth. He says that real work happens in a place where it's really chaotic, where bombs are going off, where there's a lot going on. And we should look at our reactions, not the bombs and the people that trigger us. We really need to look at us, and that those triggers are useful information for us to see what we can do in the situation and how to analyze ourselves and how we can better ourselves.
It's definitely something to think about. There's a lot to learn anyway, from everything.
Yes. So manage compassionately. We are the managers of our pages, and it's not just a page or a screen, which we can sometimes forget. It's made up of individuals. So ultimately, when managing with compassion and kindness, it's going to be a solid page, like a company would be a solid company, and will be a better rock, like the company or the organization would be. So we can be compassionate influencers with solid, compassionate pages and loyal followers who feel good following by considering what others would enjoy and be inspired by. And
compassion is such an important piece in general. Like,
we always want to bring a Hasidic dimension. So I have a couple here that will tie this in all together from a webinar that Rabbi Chase Taub had recently delivered called How to Work on Yourself. And one of the things he shared was, which we've been talking about throughout this episode, knowing your values. If we're going to a therapist and we need help, we need to come in with our values and purpose, because it can be dangerous to conform to any ism or any ology. And I guess we can compare that to social media. We can lose sight of what our values are. So like when you're going to a therapist, we can borrow their tools and use what works, but we have to come in with our own sense of meaning and purpose. He was talking about Bittul, which is humility.
Right.
And he broke it up and he said, Bittul, be a tool. Be a tool for Hashem.
That's very good.
Yes. So when I'm focused on what is my purpose? What are my values? What does God want from me? That helps with sharing and with receiving on social media.
You're actually less likely to succeed if you're so consumed with how will I come off? How will I sound? Will I? It's all about the self. The minute you let go, the minute you could let go of the self, right, and recognize that I'm not in the center of your attention, you are in the center of mine. That means I am here to serve you, to serve my purpose, and that you're better off doing that in terms of becoming successful and, you know, following through on things that are important.
One of the things that we can ask ourselves, if we know if our intentions are good and we're publicizing Hashem's greatness and not our own, is if you're just as happy to share other people's accomplishments as your own. Like you're happy to like other people's posts or share other people's things. And if you know that you're happy to do that, then you know it's not about you. It's just about bringing light to the world and making it better.
Right, exactly.
So as far as bringing light into the darkness, in the healing world that we live in, there is something called the shadow self and embracing healing there. So have you heard of the shadow self?
Yeah. It's a part of your personality that has all the parts of yourself that you don't want to admit that you have.
So someone had sent Rabbi Taubin a question about the shadow self, and he was looking into if it's compatible with Torah. So everything is a paradox in Torah. Is darkness a creation, just like light is creation, or is darkness the absence of light? A shadow is blocking the light. A darkness that is the absence of something, you can't elevate it because there's nothing there. It's the absence of something, so it's nothing. So the question is, how can you elevate it?
Right.
Then there's another way of looking at darkness, and that darkness is an entity. That darkness we can elevate. So it means that the lack of something is the lack of potential, but the presence of something, even something bad, has potential even to be good. There are two kinds of avodah, and this is from David HaMelech. Sur meira va'ase tov, turn away from evil or turn to do good. So there is what to turn away from, and then there's what we want to turn towards, to be proactive in pursuing. Or if God's intent was for the soul to avoid evil, then God should have put the soul up in heaven. But God brought us down to this world where there's darkness, and that shows us not to turn away from evil, but to do good. Not the negation of negativity, but the pursuit of positivity. Instead of turning away and just leaving it as if it's non-existent, we're taking it and turning it into something positive. And applying this to social media, which has a huge effect on all of us in the world, like we just shared, the pros and the cons. It has the negative. We can leave it if we feel we don't have anything positive to bring to it and it's not doing us any good. But we can also bring positive to it. And it does take work to do it in the right way. Like we just shared, with the right intentions, with substance, with compassion, and with purpose and humility, we can enhance the value of the positivity we can bring to social media, and we can turn towards it and face it and bring good to it. We can reclaim it to have positive value, the value that gives it the side of good. I just love this whole concept of that social media can be dark, but we can turn it into something positive.
Totally.
It's like an ongoing project. But when we do it for the sake of bringing good and light, we are not as worried about the feedback and likes and what we are getting in return. Let's try to internalize that likes are just a number. And it's really about giving and sharing and bringing light.
Yeah. And it says nothing about your value as an individual, as a human being. That's for sure.
That basically summarizes it in a nutshell. We're going to try and together be conscious, mindful scrollers and posters. And I think
that is the crux of it, is to just be mindful about what role it plays in your life, what you can do differently, and what you feel you want to change, because changing is an essential part of growth and understanding and self-awareness.
Ida, like we always do, let's just give a short word for a summary of the tips. Follow what helps you. not what hurts you.
Set time limits.
Start your day off with what's right.
Make your bedroom technology free.
Let's be examples to our children.
Make yourself better or make yourself feel better. Recognize the difference, yeah, and what role the ego plays.
Manage with compassion.
Know your values and your purpose.
Turn darkness into light.
So we're going to end with a quote, which I found actually on social media.
There you go.
Become more aware of what is really worth your energy.
If you want to change someone's life, don't do it by social media. This is a real I-thou face-to-face experience. And yes, you'll keep your 2 meters distance or whatever. There are certain things you really can't do other than face-to-face. You can't fulfill the mitzvah of listening to shofar by listening on Zoom. It can't be done. You know, you've got to be there in that famous phrase from Hamilton, in the room where it happens.
In the room where it happens, yes.
Yeah. So it's really, really difficult. But there's a big plus to social media. I mean, many pluses. Number one, you can reach people across the world, which is really and truly incredible. And yes. Chabad were the first people who used modern communications technology, cable television, satellite television, that kind of thing. They used it way, way before anyone else. And the other thing, which I'm not an expert on, but here it is. I have 2 brothers living in Jerusalem. So when I was in Jerusalem, I would always go with my brother to the local shul. It's called the Shtiblach. It's a little cluster of shuls in Katamon. And for 22 years, I was chief rabbi of Britain and the Commonwealth. And yet when I was in shul, almost nobody came up and said Shabbat Shalom.
Wow.
I was in the shul on Chol HaMoed Sukkot last year, and almost everyone came up and said Chag Sameach. And I was trying to work out how come for 22 years they didn't, and suddenly they did. And I realized the answer, WhatsApp.
WhatsApp.
You know, I'd been doing a daily WhatsApp.
Yeah.
From the beginning of Elul all the way through. And for some reason, people found WhatsApp very direct and very intimate. They told me they felt as if I was speaking to them. So it's clear that each of these technologies has a particular strength.
Right.
And I was amazed that WhatsApp turned out to be more powerful than being chief rabbi.